You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Join your... Wait, what?
50% off your fifth session.
Huh?
Focus on the value.
Value.
How about a rewards program you can actually use every day? Finally, there's plenty. Earn points at one place and use them at another. Join for free and discover exclusive offers only at plenty.com or on the Plenty app. There's plenty together. Terms and conditions apply.
Sounds of crowds outside the courthouse as New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady arrives for a court appearance in New York in the Deflategate case. The NFL Players Union says Brady's suspension violates the league's labor contract. The league suspended him for 4 games for his role in using underinflated balls during a championship game last season, but the judge reportedly cannot modify the punishment.
Judge Richard Berman can either uphold Brady's 4-game suspension or throw it out altogether. The losing side could then appeal, which could easily drag the case on for months. Berman has urged the parties to settle, but they've shown little inclination to do so.
That was AP correspondent Warren Levinson.
This is Jeannie Aversa, CRPC, Financial Advisor at Patton Hyde & Associates. Do you have questions about your retirement, like will your money last throughout your lifetime? Will you have enough to live the life you want? And when will you be able to retire? If so, you're not alone. As a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., Patton Hyde & Associates can help you find the answers with the exclusive Confident Retirement Approach. We'll work with you one-to-one to understand your goals and discuss the 4 key areas of retirement, including covering your essentials, lifestyle, protection, and legacy needs. From there, we'll work together to develop a retirement roadmap with clear steps you can take to help you retire on your terms. Call Patton Hyde & Associates today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor.
The weather today is partly sunny with a high near 90. West winds around 10 miles per hour. Tonight, patchy fog after 3 a.m. Otherwise, it'll be partly cloudy with a low around 64. West winds around 5 miles an hour, becoming calm in the evening. Tuesday, sunny with a high near 92. North winds around 5 miles an hour, becoming calm. And Tuesday night will be mostly clear with a low around 67. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 91. And Wednesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 67. Welcome to Mental Health Matters, the award-winning show on Hunterdon County Chamber Radio. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and... This is NAMI's hour, and NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no office. We don't get paid. We work out of our homes, and we try to help people who have someone in their family or themselves who have a mental health issue. We do this by running support groups, by giving presentations, by running a class called Family to Family, which is totally free. Everything we do is totally free, but the class is totally free. Any material is free. And there's one going to start September 17th in Flemington at 52 East Main Street at 7 o'clock. You have to register. It's 12 weeks, and it goes into the various mental health issues, what a person's going through who has a mental health issue, and also what families can do to help, what they shouldn't do, et cetera, et cetera. It more or less educates you a little bit more about what your loved one is going through and what you're going through, basically. And if you want to register for the class, you can call 908-735-4465. and ask for Priscilla or myself, Larry, that's my wife, or you can call 908-284-0500. And that is a NAMI's phone line, which we will get back to you on. It's not manned 24 hours, so, but we do check it a day, every day, and we'll get back to you. And right today, we are very privileged to have with us Melissa Grohman, who is a licensed clinical social worker and a psychotherapist. And she specializes in eating disorders, relationships, healing emotional pain. And she's had 25 years of experience. And she just recently, a few months back, written a book entitled Better Is Not So Far Away. Melissa, are you there?
I'm right here, Larry. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. I always enjoy having you on because it's, it's just every time we talk, even if we're talking about the same topics, it always seems like we throw a different curve into it and we go on a different topic. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's really wonderful to have you on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, emotional health is a vast sea of interesting things to talk about. So
it is that.
New things.
Yeah. First of all, I want to ask, how'd you arrive at the title for your book, Better Is Not So Far Away?
Well, I think it was sort of a collective effort and trying to convey a message that, there's always hope, no matter how bad things seem or how far down we think we've gone. And, it really was sort of a collective effort between myself and the editor. I think it was a lot. My editor at McGraw-Hill just felt like, let's put the message out there that, when you're struggling or you're suffering or the world seems dark, that really it's not so far away, that things can get better. And even if it seems like it's impossible or it's, really just distant hope that you could have a different life or a different feeling inside, that's really not that far away. So I think that was the idea.
I like that. It's it also gives people hope, like you said, that better is not that far away, if you do certain things to, help it along.
And then we don't have to be perfect. It's not about curing anything or fixing anything, which, of course, we may want to be cured or fixed, but that, sometimes if the goal is too lofty, it seems like, forget it, it's too far away. But better is better. Better, you can be better in 5 minutes.
And there aren't too many people in this world who are perfect.
I don't know any.
Yeah. I try to think I am, but my wife
Except
always tells
Larry.
Me no, But also, from your book, I gathered you wrote from personal experience. Is that true?
Yeah, I did write from a lot of personal experience. I had an eating disorder as an adolescent, and I'm no stranger to emotional pain. I don't know many people that are strangers to emotional pain. So I was really able to draw on some loss and some pain and eating disorder struggles that I've had in my life, and that helped. Although the book itself is really not about me or my struggles, it's really meant to be more universal and to talk about, what do you do with difficult, painful feelings? We all have them. Sometimes when you're in the deepest part of the darkness, you really feel like you're all alone, and sometimes you want to be alone. So I use my own personal experience to draw on it, but it's mostly drawn from my professional experience and from, I think, human experience.
But, I find it very, I'm at a loss for words, very satisfying, for lack of a better word, that you can speak from experience. You're not just reading from a book and saying, okay, if somebody says this, I should say that. You know what I'm saying? It's like you're talking from having lived through it. And I think it helps the patient that you're trying to help realize that you've also gone through it, so you pretty much know what you're talking about.
Yeah, for sure. There's a saying, you don't get it unless you've got it.
Yeah, right. That's true.
It's true. I mean, I think, look, everybody's experience is unique to them and is slightly different, but the fact is there are human threads and human emotional experiences that if you've had it or you've had a similar struggle that, you can relate to in a much different way than someone who doesn't know it. I mean, I think that you must experience this with your work with NAMI, that, nobody understands like someone who's been there.
Right. And we've been there.
Yep.
I think I told you that my youngest son has schizophrenia.
Yes.
And, you know, he was hospitalized for well over 2.5 years continuously.
Wow.
Outside of 1 month, he was hospitalized in state hospitals, both Trenton Psych and Hagedorn when it was open. So, you know, we understand. We've been there, you know. He had attempted suicide twice and, you know.
Wow.
So, you know, it's like, yeah, when we're talking to somebody, it's not like we know all the answers, because I'll be the first to admit I don't, and I'm not a doctor. But it's just from personal experience, you know, what parents or loved ones can and can't do to help their loved one, you know, who has a mental health issue. And, you know, like I said, it's like you can talk from experience. Well, I can talk from experience, you know. I recently, well, not too awful long ago, had a woman call me, and she said that her son came back from Iraq and he won't leave his room. He won't talk to her. He won't, you know, and all that. And she said, I go in, I talk to him, you know, and he tells me to get out, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I says, well, can you ask him if he would talk to me? And she says, well, why would he talk to you? I says, well, I'm a vet. She says, yeah, but you weren't in Iraq. I says, nah, I was in Vietnam, but it's pretty much similar, you know.
Yeah.
Wow. He was in a desert. I was in a jungle, you know, but it's the same thing, you know. The consequences are the same, you know. And he did talk to me, and he talked to me for well over an hour and a half, and at least twice. And he is now, and I've convinced him, not that I'm patting myself on the back, but I convinced him to go to the Veterans Hospital, Lyons Veterans, and he did. And he still goes there for counseling and stuff, and he's coming along real good. But it's the same thing. You know, it's like you talking to your people about eating disorders, and you're speaking from experience. Well, I talked to him about being a vet because I've been a vet, you know, and I know what he's going through, or pretty much.
Yeah. And I mean, it's amazing. I think that we should never underestimate the power of being deeply understood. I mean, it's you know, we toss these things around kind of glibly today, like, oh, you know, I just need to vent, or I just need to validate it. But the fact is that it really is the starting point for change, and to have someone who can deeply hear you and who can resonate with your feelings and really be with you and really understand and be interested in understanding, and not, you know, and not try to counter it or argue it, and who can be useful. And then from that point on, there can be, you know, there it is, better is not that far away. You know, then you were able to help this young man access something that could move his life forward, but he had to feel understood first, and he had to feel like somebody got it and wasn't arguing with him or telling him what to do, or, you know, just to be with him. And that's it's an amazing power. We underestimate that today. We really do.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, it's like another woman had called me, and she said her daughter doesn't get out of bed. She says she has been in bed for 4 days. She won't get out. I says, okay, what would you want her to do if she got out? Well, get up and shower and get dressed. I said, okay, suppose she did that, then what? Well, come downstairs and have breakfast or lunch or whatever. I said, okay, so let's say she did that too, then what? Well, take the dog for a walk, go look for a job. I said, okay. I said, tell you what, why don't you just don't bother her for a couple days? Don't tell her to get up, don't go in her room, don't tell her lunch is ready, don't do anything, leave her alone. She says, you mean that? I says, yeah, try it. You tried everything else and it didn't work. Try this. She calls me back about a week and a half later. She says, my daughter got up. I said, really? What did she do then? She says, well, she got dressed. She showered and got dressed and came downstairs, had breakfast, and she's taking a dog for a walk now. And she says, how did you? I says, no, it's not that. I says, I don't think your daughter didn't want to get up. I think at that point in time, she couldn't get up, because whatever she was dealing with internally kept her in bed.
Yeah.
Not that she didn't want to get out of bed. Not that she didn't want to go walk the dog or go for breakfast or whatever. But she couldn't at that point in time. And you keeping on her about it and that just forced her deeper and deeper into that shell, you know. And she says, well, I says, look, just back off. Let her go do what she wants. Now she's up. Let her do what she wants. You know, if you need any more help, give me a call. You know, but it's true. Sometimes we don't realize that it's not that the person doesn't want to do the right thing, or so to speak. but it's that they can't.
Right.
Mentally or physically or whatever the case may be. And
yeah,
it's a shame.
And, you know, that can't, I, in the book I even talk about it, you know, that mm-hmm. can't won't line is a very fine line. And I think we face that line with children, with friends, with certainly with our spouses. And, you know, where is the line inside of ourselves between we can't do something and we won't? And sometimes it's a very, very deep space between can't
right.
and won't. But, you know, to your point about this mother and this young woman is that usually most of us have some sort of allergy to being told what to do. I mean, sometimes mm-hmm. we want to be, but if someone's really hounding us, even when we could do it, we
right.
don't want to if we're being so forced on us. You know, we have to kind of meet someone where they are. And the answer is sometimes exactly what you said, you know, back off. Let it go. Don't try to force it, because that usually ends up in an oppositional reaction.
Exactly. You know, and I've seen it through NAMI time and time again where, you know, I often say that mothers are like mother bears. They hold the cubs close and, you know, cuddle them and want to do everything for them and help them and all that, which is not bad. But, you know, there's a line. Fathers are, oh, the window's broke, I can fix it. Oh, the car won't start, I can get it started. You know, I can fix it. And a lot of times they don't understand that mental health issues they can't fix. You know, it's something that just can't be replaced with a piece of glass, you know. And they don't get that a lot of times. I don't say everybody, but a lot of times. And, you know, it's just unfortunate.
Right. Well, I think parents especially often ask me, like, what can I do? I want to do something. And it's the right parental instinct to want to protect
mm-hmm.
and to fix
sure.
and to want to take care of, you know, for, you know, to try and help your child. And sometimes the hardest thing is not doing nothing, but doing something in a quieter way and not forcing what you think is the solution.
Right.
And that's really hard to do, because it's good parenting to want to help your child. I mean, that's what parents mm-hmm. are supposed to do.
Right. But sometimes it's a difficult decision to step back.
Right.
You know, and sometimes that's what it takes. But
right.
is,
and it's hard to know when to step back.
Exactly.
And when to force an issue. It's
exactly.
not always so clear.
No, it's not. And, you know, sometimes you force an issue and after you've done that, you realize, yeah, I shouldn't have, you know. And vice versa, or I didn't do it and I should have, you know, but it's a learning experience, basically, you know. Dr. Spock didn't write these rules down in his book for bringing up children, you know. So,
right.
But is eating and cutting disorders like abusive traits of alcohol, drugs, is it used as an escape from what the person is going through?
Sorry, my voice is a little funky today. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think especially food, especially binge eating and compulsive eating, you know, to take a nosedive into the food, to put some sort of what seems to be a pleasure and a compulsion. I mean, I think these disorders are, they're addictions. Sometimes they serve many purposes. If they didn't serve a purpose, we wouldn't do them. They help us escape from feelings. Sometimes they help numb feelings. You know, the downside is obviously is that in general they don't really work in an authentic way. You know, they
mm-hmm.
block us from authentically being able to know how we feel and live with our difficult feelings and turn the volume down on them. But in an instant, they're a distraction from the pain of life. And sometimes inflicting physical pain in you know, like with cutting, is a distraction from an emotional pain. So it's almost a relief to hurt the body so that the mind and the heart and the soul
right.
don't feel as much pain.
Mm-hmm. And that they can concentrate on the cut
yeah.
more than what's going on in their head.
Yeah.
I don't know if I told you or not, but I was giving a presentation in the what they call 2 Central is a lockup ward in 100 Medical Center. And a fellow was there, a young man, and he said to me, can I talk to you after your... I said, sure. So we went outside, and we were talking. And all of a sudden, he says, I got to show you something. And he rolls up his sleeves on both arms. And there wasn't a piece of skin from his wrist to his elbow that wasn't cut, that hadn't have scars on it, front, back, all over. And I mean, I'm not usually at a loss for words. Ask my wife. But I was just shocked. I was like, you know, I had my mouth dropped open. I didn't know what to say, you know. And I had, you know, and I think I asked him like a dumb question. Why do you do that, you know?
I don't think that's a dumb question. It's a very good question.
Well, he said because it helps him relieve the pain in his head.
Yeah.
And that got me thinking, you know, I wonder if the psychologists or the psychiatrists or who are working with this young man realize that. And if not, they should, you know, because it might be the pathway to getting him back on track. But, you know, yeah. I was just shocked. You know, and he's, and like he said, like what you say, a lot of times it helps relieve the pain, you know, because he can concentrate on the pain that, you know, is on his arm that's bleeding rather than in his head that he can't touch or, you know, do anything about.
Right. And it is a distraction. And sometimes emotional suffering is so great that we would rather have physical suffering.
It seems too,
that we're supposed to be able to control our emotional suffering, and there's a lot of frustration and shame attached with having a lot of difficult feelings and feeling like you're supposed to be better. It's all in your head. Why can't you just fix it or snap out of it? So the physical pain really takes you away from all of that. And some young women I know, and young men also, I don't know why I'm qualifying it as young, but I guess that's mostly been my experience working with adolescents and folks in their young 20s. But they also do it because they want a feeling of control and a feeling of being alive and a feeling of trying to get in touch with their body and find something deeper. Sometimes it's a self-punishment. Sometimes it's just a way of sitting with oneself and seeing that one is real and one has existence and one has value. I mean, it sounds, you know, frustrating when you think about it, to cut and see blood, to know
right.
that you exist. But if someone's in a lot of pain and doesn't feel like they matter or that they're seen by anybody, it's a way of checking in with yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, it's sad that people go to that extreme to do that. You know.
But, you know, tolerating feelings is something that, you know, people have been studying and talking about for centuries, is what's the proper way to know about our feelings, to sit with our feelings, to use our feelings properly? How do we direct our feelings? What do we do with them? And it's just not easy. And for most of us, you know, we're not necessarily educated. I don't know if there's an emotional health class at the high schools these days. You know, how do you deal with anger? I mean, anger can be a great thing. Anger has, you know, broken down walls and won women the right to vote. And I mean, anger has done many, many good things, but anger can also really destroy. It depends what you do with it. And
right.
it's hard to know how to tolerate all the feelings that come up just in living life, you know, with parents and peers. And, you know, so how do we manage to have our thoughts and our feelings and not be sort of yanked around by them?
Yeah. Exactly. You know, it's that fine line again, you know. Could you explain pain versus suffering?
Well, I think that, you know, my own sort of take on it, and this is certainly not original, this is sort of gleaned from, you know, others who I've talked to, is really that suffering is pain without purpose. I mean, life, unfortunately or fortunately or whatever your spiritual take on things is full of pain. I mean, people are going to say things we don't like, and difficult, bad things are going to happen, and you know, life is fraught with experiences that are frustrating and painful. And I think that suffering is when we get caught in it with no way out and no purpose to it and no meaning and an endlessness about it. There are things in life that are painful, but if it has no meaning, then I think we just suffer and feel, you know, that that's all there is.
When you say have no meaning, is it have no meaning to the individual?
I think so. I mean, I think it's very personal. I mean, I guess this is, you know, kind of a philosophical take that I have, but you know, if something painful happens, then we can use that. We can feel it. We can use it. We can incorporate it into our life. You know, there's going to be painful things. There's going to be joyous things. How do we have all of our feelings? But I think the suffering happens when we get stuck in it. You know, there's a, you know, this 12-step saying that, you know, things are always better when we're living in the solution. And I think that suffering is when we get caught living in the problem.
Okay. Yeah. You know, that sounds about right, actually.
Right.
But, you know, it's just, I mean, a lot of times people, you know, how can I word it? Pain and suffering go together, you know. They're in pain, but they're suffering, or vice versa, you know. And to, you know, explain it the way you did, it makes, to me, a lot of sense, you know. But it's just, you know, a very difficult situation.
Right. Well, I mean, it's not, you know, like if you look at what you've done, and I'm sure, I'm imagining that having a son with schizophrenia is a painful, painful thing. But you have used that to have meaning. I mean, I don't want to be presumptuous, Larry, but the fact is you've used that to do something incredibly powerful, which is to, you know, participate and head up an organization that helps other people who are in pain, and you've given meaning to it, and you make it useful to the world, and you pass along, you know, comfort and solutions, and, you know, instead of staying isolated and in the dark, you've turned it into, you know, at least in part from what I know of you, you've turned it into a way to add value to the world. So, I mean, I'm being presumptuous, but...
Well,
you know,
I do it because if I feel, my wife and I feel, if we can help one family, then it's all worthwhile.
So it has meaning.
Yeah, exactly. And I have to say that my son has his own apartment now in Flemington. He has a part-time job a couple days a week.
Wow.
He volunteers one day a week at the hospital. And he, well, he's always taken his medication religiously because he was... epileptic since he's five, so he's been medication since he's five. But yeah, and he's doing very well right now. So for that, we're very grateful. Not to say that down the road we can't have a bump, but right now it's everything is very good, you know. But
right.
It's, you know, and like I said, you know, people ask me all the time, why do you do all these things? Well, like I said, if I can help one family, not go through, well, they're all going to go through the pain, but not go through the pure hell that we went through for many years.
Yeah.
It's worthwhile, you know. So anyway,
right.
What is, I have to ask, what is emotional pain and how it reacts to dealing with difficult thoughts and feelings? How does that interact?
A good and big question. I think emotional pain is when we are stuck in a feeling that doesn't seem to move, and we're emotionally suffering. When that feeling is not getting metabolized, it's not getting processed, it just is the state we live in. And I think some of the worst states of emotional pain and suffering are anger and self-pity and worthlessness and anxiety, these kinds of pains where we feel like we don't exist. And there are some very dark places where emotional pain can take us, where we don't feel valued, we don't feel heard, we don't feel connected, we don't feel like we are worth anything, we don't have any real sense of joy or accomplishment or purpose or meaning. And I think when that goes on and on, there's a lot of emotional pain and suffering. And what often happens is that translates into, like you were talking earlier about a young woman not wanting to get out of bed. I mean, it gets in the way because we think that, you know, we think that our thoughts are real a lot of times. You know, we think that if we feel something, that that's a fact. And we have a certain relationship to our thoughts and also to our feelings, and we could get stuck. You know, we can just not figure out who we are and how to contribute to the world, what we want, how to interact with people, how to be in relationships that, you know, are not always easy, but that can be, you know, hammered out and worked through. So I think that when we're stuck in the pain, we just don't know how to move forward. I mean, life is not easy. I mean, it hasn't always been for me. It has been sometimes. But,
well, you know. I think there's very few people that life has been easy for, you know.
Right.
You know, unless you're born into a multi-billion-dollar family and, you know, it had everything given to you over the years, well, then maybe life may be easy. But to the average person, I don't think life has been easy. We all have issues. We all have, whether they're medical issues or whatever that we face in our lives, you know, it's how we get through them, I think, you know. And I think that your book helps people who read it to get through their issues.
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, part of the point of the book was to say, look, you're not alone. There are things you can do. It's to encourage people to take a look at their relationship to their thoughts, to know that all of their thoughts are not necessarily facts, that we have ways of working with our own minds that can make things better, that feelings don't have to knock us down. There's so many things that we can do to make life better, and certainly, like you said earlier, no such thing is perfect. But I think back to your question about, you know, emotional pain and suffering is that a lot of times when we're in it, we don't know how to connect with other people who could maybe be of use to us. We don't know necessarily how to work things through. We stay stuck in some kind of isolation, and we listen to certain detrimental thoughts, like mm-hmm. I'm all alone, or this won't ever get better, or I'm worthless, or I stink, or this is, you know, ridiculous,
right.
Or we think of these thoughts as facts. We don't just notice them and say, hey, I'm having this thought that I'm worthless. Isn't that interesting? We just take it as a fact, and then we act on it. We suffer from it, and we act on it. But if we were to step back and say, gee, that's just a thought I'm having. I don't have to get attached to that. I don't have to fuse that with, you know, a feeling of worthlessness. I can take a look at that. I can, you know, I don't have to
right.
believe these things.
And do you find that it's, how do I word this? Do you find that it's difficult for a person to seek help when they're in a situation like that? That
yeah,
you just
I think
described?
It's enormously difficult. I think it's enormously difficult because we're afraid. People are afraid. We all have a lot of fear of you know, just like we were talking about before, you know, of not being understood or of being told what to do or being told that our feelings aren't valid mm-hmm. or being corrected or misunderstood. You know, there's a lot of fear, and we're afraid to look at ourselves, too, because I think we think, oh, my God, if I have these flaws or I have these faults or something, you know, so wrong with me that, you know, it's terrible. And the fact is, everybody's got something. I mean, we all have faults. Yep. We all have flaws. We've all got stuff, you know. So
right.
when we're brave enough to say, you know what, I got to take a look at my stuff. It's not the end of the world. But that's scary to do. And if you walk in to a friend or a therapist's office and you don't feel like you're really heard, you know, all the more so it can be scary. I mean, I would hope that most professionals at the very get-go really would say, you know, feel free. I know I try and cultivate this in my office, that this is a place where you should feel free, or I should help you to feel free to say anything and everything and to have those thoughts and feelings be understood.
Mm-hmm.
And we,
right.
You know.
And, you know, I find that in some cases people don't want to go to a therapist or a psychiatrist or a counselor because of the stigmatism that going to a counselor or a therapist or a psychiatrist puts on them, what their friends would think, what their relatives may think. Do you find that to be a problem?
Yeah, you know, it is sometimes, but I'll tell you, I think less and less these days. I think that, you know, lots of people are in therapy, and to me, you know, I've heard it said, it's the same thing about, you know, 12-step programs. It's not for people who want it, and it's not for people who need it. It's for people who are willing to go, and there is somewhat of a stigma, but I think it's getting better. I think that people realize, like, it's not necessarily a place for people who are nuts. We're all nuts. You know, it's just a place to go and to talk and to grow. And by the way, I also think that, like, therapy isn't the only game in town. I mean, I'm a big fan of what I do, but I don't think it's the only game in town. I mean, I think that, you know, there's so many resources out there. There's so many different places to grow and get support. I think NAMI is one of them. I mean, I think that there's a lot of places that we can access information about our inner worlds and how to process things. You know, the web offers a lot of things these days. There's a lot of good reading. There's so many resources. I mean, therapy is great, in my biased opinion, because it is a place, hopefully, to really talk and work things through and to understand ourselves better. But there's a lot of resources for that.
Yeah, you know, it's, I told someone not too awful long ago, they were explaining it to me, they have severe depression and, you know, but they don't take medication. They exercise and they do, I can't think of the name of it. It'll come to me. But, and she was saying to me, what do you think? And I just said, does it work? She says, yeah. I said, well, continue doing it. You know, if it works, don't change it.
Right. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right, exactly. I says, but just understand that down the road a ways, it may not continue to work. Then you may have to think about taking a medication along with doing the exercise and, you know, everything else. But I says, if this is working now and it's been working for the last couple of years, continue, do it. You know, and she says, I thought you'd tell me that. I said, why? Why would you change something that works? You know, I mean, I don't understand. I says, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if it works, you continue. You know, like you said, don't break it if it is not, you know, you don't have to fix it if it's not broken, you know. But she was surprised, you know, because this is what she does. She doesn't want to take medication. I says, okay, fine. You know, but think about it. Someplace down the road, you may have to, you know. Not that you will, but you may. So, you know, but it's interesting because, you know, some people would say, oh, no, you have to take medication. Well, I don't feel that way. I feel that, you know, whatever works, you know.
Well, it's a good point. I think that we need different things at different times in our lives. And the best thing is to be open to what you might need at any given chapter in your life. Mm-hmm. And there are times where we need more or less of something. And, you know, life is fluid that way.
Right, right. We have to take a quick break. You've been listening to Mental Health Matters, and we are very privileged to have Melissa Grohman with us today, who is a psychotherapist and a licensed clinical social worker from New Jersey, actually. Nutley, New Jersey. And we will be back in just a few minutes.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
What can you do as a member of Rotary? You can eradicate polio. You can promote peace. You can feed the hungry. You can help children do better in school. Because Rotary believes that by working together, you can do anything. This is District Governor Megan Jones Holt. Learn more about Rotary and join me every Monday at 11 a.m. on the Rotary Hour, the show that is dedicated to answering the ultimate question of what Rotary is. Find us on the web at rotarynj.org. Rotary, humanity in motion.
Did you know that 48% of executives see the golf course as an ideal business environment? 93% said playing golf with a business associate is a good way to establish a closer relationship. This September, bring your business to the green and join us for our 2015 Golf Classic. This year's event will take place on Monday, September 21st at Copper Hill Country Club with a 9 a.m. shotgun start. Don't miss this annual event, which includes exciting contests, a networking luncheon, and awards ceremony that will present the winning foursome with the Hunterdon Cup. For more details, please visit www.hunterdonchamber.org or call the Chamber at 908-782-7115.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. We're with Melissa Grohman, who is a psychotherapist in New Jersey, and she specializes in eating disorders, relationships, and healing emotional pain. And she's had 25 years experience and has recently written a book entitled Better Is Not So Far Away. I got to ask, Melissa, are you thinking about writing another book?
Well, you know, I did just write another short book called Six Simple Ways to Make Your Woman Happy and Create a Great Life. For men, it's I'm self-publishing it. It should be out soon. So I have tackled that project, and we'll see. I was focusing a bit on the importance of good communication in marriage and how men can get their own needs met when they're frustrated trying to understand and live with a woman. But in terms of another book past that, I don't know. We'll see. I think I would like to get back to writing. I'm a big fan of writing, but it's a big project. It's very consuming.
Very time-consuming, isn't it?
Very time-consuming. And
what was the thing? Six simple ways to help your woman.
To make your woman happy.
To help make your woman happy?
Yeah, six simple ways to make your woman happy and create a great life. So it's going to be up hopefully on Amazon in the next month or so. So hopefully that's my current project is to get that launched.
You'll have to let me know when it comes out.
I definitely will. It's a short book, but it speaks to the importance of, you know, overcoming fear and frustration and resentment and trying to get willing to put in six pretty easy basic things in order to help a marriage along to a new and deeper level and or to stabilize one that's not so stable. They're kind of the basics.
Well, I have to stabilize mine for the next 50 years. We just celebrated 50, so I have to go for another 50.
Do you have any advice?
Yeah. Have your wife work days and you work nights.
Don't avoid each other. Only kidding.
But I did do that for a while. But
wow, that's difficult.
Yeah, it is, and it was difficult with the kids because, you know. But anyway, you had to do what you had to do. You know, you had mortgages to pay and so on and so forth, and you know. But I always tease my wife because she's 9 months older than I am, and I always say she robbed the cradle. Because I was 20 when we got married, and and I was still in the military, and I had just come back from overseas, and they told me I couldn't get married without my mother's signature.
Oh my goodness!
And I says, "What? You got to be kidding me!" They said, "No, you're not 21. You have to have your mother's signature if you're 20, because you aren't considered an adult till you're 21 in the state of New Jersey at that time."
Wow!
And I says, "Do you realize where I just came back from?" You know, do you realize I've been in the military 3 years already? That doesn't matter. You have to have your mother sign. You know? So I tell my wife she robbed the cradle. You know,
but that's great.
I says, yeah. I says, gee, if you didn't marry me, you'd be sitting on a rocking chair on the front porch, you know, wondering what happened. You know, I says,
well, there you go. Wow.
But yeah, it's interesting. But
50 years is a big accomplishment.
Yeah, you know, and you have your ups and downs like everybody else, but, you know, you try to get through them, you know, or work them out or whatever, you know. Can you explain to me the upside of difficult feelings?
Well, you know, like I think we were starting to mention before, is that, you know, sometimes these feelings, when we can learn to tolerate them, can be put to good use. Again, anger has accomplished a lot of things in the world if it's channeled properly. And even jealousy, for example, you know, which is a really painful emotion for a lot of people, but jealousy can help us define what's important to us and what we need and what we're shooting for and what we'd like to accomplish and what we value in life. If we use it that way, if we say, okay, this is an informant, this feeling, it's not a destroyer. And it can, you know, so sometimes we can take bad feelings and use them to guide us to what we'd like in our lives and what we really believe and how we'd like to be. Sadness can help us relate to others. It can help us develop compassion.
You know, when I was looking, you know, on your websites and stuff, and I came across something that they had, like, I don't know, 12 people famous people that suffered from eating disorders. And, you know, one or two of them I knew about, but a lot of them I didn't. Paula Abdul, Elton John, Sandra Dee. Now she goes back to my age, you know.
Yeah.
Princess Diana. Jane Fonda.
Yep.
Mary Kate Olsen, one of the Olsen twins.
Yep.
And, you know, you just, I don't know, a lot of times people in general don't think that people of that nature have these kind of problems. And I know that when we give presentations monthly to the educational services here in Flemington, and the lady I do it with, she's big on this PowerPoint stuff. And so she does the PowerPoint, and I sit and look at her, you know, watch it, you know. But the first thing we always do is put two screens up there of all the famous people that suffered from mental illness. Yeah, there was actors. Yeah, there's actresses. But there's presidents, you know, Thomas Jefferson. You know, it's just... Winston Churchill, you know, carried England on his back for 7 years, suffered from major depression.
Yeah, well, look, certainly there are a lot of, throughout history, a lot of people who were powerfully creative, who were desperately
Absolutely.
Unhappy. I mean, you know, look at Robin Williams, a tragedy
right.
for all of us, you know,
right.
deeply painful.
And Beethoven.
You know, intelligence and talent right. and creativity doesn't mean that the mind doesn't trip us
sure.
up.
You know, what I found so interesting with Jefferson was he wouldn't enter a room if there was four or five people in it.
Mm.
He could stand on a balcony and talk to 5,000, but he couldn't enter a room that had five people in it.
Right.
In fact, when he was writing the Declaration, he would get a hold of Franklin and meet him on a street corner and hand him the papers, and Franklin would go in and present them.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah,
that.
If you go to Philadelphia and you go through that, it's said that, you know. That's not something I dreamed up. That's fact from when we did a tour up at Philadelphia. And if you haven't been, you should. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I have been, but not recently. So time to go back, maybe.
And, you know, don't you find that people with these, who are dealing with any of these disorders that we mentioned, cutting, eating, binging, you know, whatever... don't you find that they're vulnerable?
Yeah, you know, I do. Whether they're more vulnerable than the rest of us, I don't know. I mean, there's so many nuances. But I think we're all vulnerable to being hurt and to trying to figure out how to live a meaningful, good life. But I think in terms of being vulnerable to, you know, more of the dangers of the world, I do think so in certain ways. Being caught up in that is more likely to steal, you know, your authentic self and your senses and your more innately healthy thinking. So I think it's true that, you know, if you're wrapped up in that, you are more likely to be less aware of things that could be harmful to you in the world. So it is true.
Yeah, and it's, are there warning signs that people could look for, you know, to say, oh, my sister or brother or whatever?
Look, certainly with anorexia, there's a lot of physical warning
sure.
signs, although not always. I think one can look for isolation. Compulsive eating and binging, look, a lot of the world right now eats compulsively. You know, food is easily accessible and very pleasurable and very difficult to control. It's probably one of the world's easiest accessible drugs and pleasures. Mm-hmm. So to look for people that are, you know, if you're talking about an adolescent or a child, if a child is spending a lot of time in the bathroom or isn't talking or seems to be isolated, one of the problems with some eating disorders is that they can stay underneath the surface because, you know, a lot of times, especially with compulsive overeating, binge eating, and bulimia, you can be pretty functional. Same thing with cutting. I mean, you can cover your arms. So
right.
You can seem pretty functional. So I always just encourage, especially parents, you know, like we were saying at the beginning, just listen, you know, be a good ear.
Mm-hmm.
Be a good ear.
Right. If a parent has a child that is a so-called picky, quote-unquote, eater, should they be worried?
Not necessarily. Most kids are picky eaters.
Yeah, I know I was.
And that's just normal childhood development. I think one of the things that happens is parents, you know, as we were saying earlier, too, it's this fine line between reacting and not reacting, and sometimes the best reaction is to wait and see and not
mm-hmm.
react. And sometimes parents get very discouraged very early, and you have to try your vegetables, and they're not eating vegetables, and we get all kinds of afraid that we're not parenting it properly, and they're not going to develop, and they have to. We have these ideas: they have to eat this, and they have to expand, or they can't. And I think, you know, when we sort of calm down and say, you know, let's let this breathe a little bit and let's watch it. I mean, sometimes there is something developing and it's good to flag it, but a lot of times it's the reaction that starts the snowball going.
Right.
So it's better to sort of wait and see.
See, I say this because in my house, my father was a sailor, and he was all over and hardly home a lot. My mother was from Germany, and she came over at 17, and when she cooked something, you ate it.
Right.
There was no, I don't like it. You know, now I'm more picky either than then. I mean, I would pick at it and stuff, and she said, well, you're going to sit there till you finish it. You know, I don't care if it's 10 o'clock tonight, you're going to eat it, you know. And so you wind up eating it, you know, because you didn't have a choice, you know,
right.
Because mom
yep.
was mom, you know.
Right.
But I just wonder because, you know, yeah, there's kids that don't like fish or they don't like this or they don't like that. But maybe it is a sign, but maybe it's not, you know. So like you said, you got to more or less stay back and let's see what happens, you know, I would think.
Well, in little kids, it's most likely not. You know, in
right.
little kids, it's just they have to be encouraged to try something new. If they will, if they won't, you know. But forcing a child is generally, you know, making a sweeping generalization, is generally not the thing to do. And it's also difficult for parents who have kids that overeat, which is a whole other topic. Because when do you try and help a child not to have so much? And that also creates a lot of times oppositional reactions and sneaking, and a lot of parents
mm-hmm.
ask me, what am I supposed to do? Just let her clean out the fridge? And it's difficult to know, but sometimes if there's too many restrictions, then kids will be tempted to find it elsewhere and sneak it. So these aren't easy things, but I find that when we slow down and we pause, a little bit of prayer doesn't hurt.
Yep.
You know, sometimes easy does it, and these things can they can evolve, and they don't necessarily, you know, we don't know why people have eating disorders. There's all kinds of different
mm-hmm. right.
contributing factors. But sometimes just sort of watching a situation, and clearly if your child is in some kind of imminent danger and they're severely underweight, then that is something that hopefully a pediatrician and a parent and the school and
right.
know, would flag, and then
right.
more immediate intervention has to be done.
In the last couple minutes, first of all, I'd like to how someone could reach out to you, phone, email, etc. If you could give that, I would appreciate it.
Well, I would obviously be happy to. Yeah, I mean, I'm in New Jersey, but the best way is really the website, which is melissagroman.com. I also have a podcast show on my website called Recovery, Hope, and Healing. It's on iTunes and on Stitcher. but it's recoveryhopeandhealing.com. But melissagroman.com, my phone number's on there, my email's on there. It's pretty easy.
And in the last couple minutes, besides reading your excellent book, what are some
so
of the
nice,
what are some of the most traveled paths to recovery?
Well, I think, look, I'm a big 12-step fan. There's a lot of good 12-step programs out there. Everything from Overeaters Anonymous to, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous to CODA to there's Al-Anon. There's lots of good. There's lots of good 12-step programs. They're online. They're on the internet. I mean, they're on the phone. They're on the internet. There are live meetings everywhere. There's also a lot of great reading material.
Right.
There's tons of books, and you know, if you like what you see and you like the philosophy, then you know you keep reading and you keep going. I feel like as long as someone's doing something, next right small thing, then it's all good.
Right.
You're on the path.
Exactly. Would you give your email thing again?
I'll give my website.
There you go. Yeah. Okay.
My email's fine too, but the email's on the website. So it's melissagroman.com.
Okay. Melissa, I can't tell you how pleased I am that you came back, and I will be in touch down the road, and you will come back again, I hope.
I would love that.
You know, because it always seems like we have something to talk about, and we're not, you know, straining to fill the hour, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's... And you wrote 6 simple ways to make your woman happy?
Yep. Hopefully it's going to make its appearance soon.
Okay. Well, you'd have to email me and let me know. Okay?
I definitely will, Larry. Thank you so much. I always enjoy talking to you so much.
Likewise. And we won't be on next week because next week is, what is it? Oh, Labor Day. So they'll be running rewinds next week. So, but we'll be back in 2 weeks. And you've been listening to Mental Health Matters. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter. See you in 2 weeks.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
USA Headline News. I'm Kelly Sloan. An arraignment will be held today for the man charged with the shooting death of a suburban Houston sheriff. Shannon Miles is facing capital murder charges in the death of Harris County Sheriff's Deputy Darren Goforth, who was shot repeatedly Friday while filling up his gas tank in Cypress, Texas.
We're going to try to figure out the motive, even though we don't have to prove it under Texas law.
That was Devin Anderson, the Harris County District Attorney. Hawaiians are awaiting Hurricane Ignacio as it moves closer to the Big Island and Maui. Forecasters say this storm is weakening and is expected to become a tropical storm by tomorrow, but it still could cause dangerous surf, according to Tom Evans of the Central Pacific Hurricane Center.
Not only surfers not to be out there, but people to be away from the shoreline. The breakers that we get onto the shore, we're looking at 15 to 20 feet.
In the Atlantic, Fred has strengthened to a hurricane and is expected to move across the Cape Verde Islands this afternoon. This is USA Headline News.
Wish summer would last forever? Ask Sherwin-Williams and save 30% on paints and stains during the Endless Summer Sale, August 27th through September 7th. With colors like Picnic, August Moon, and Pressed Flower, you'll be surrounded by summer long after the leaves have changed. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store and save 30% today. Find your nearest store at sherwinwilliams.com/sale. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
There are two types of hot water heaters, thankless and tankless. The thankless kind work like this.
I'm throwing in a load of laundry.
Hold off on that. I'm hopping in the shower.
Rinnai tankless water heaters work this way.
I'm throwing in a load of laundry.
No problem. I'm hopping in the shower.
Rinnai's innovative tankless water heaters provide an endless supply of hot water, even for multiple tasks at the same time. Rinnai tankless water heaters, the hot way to heat water. Learn more about Rinnai's industry-leading products at www.rinnai.us. That's R-I-N-N-A-I.us.
Austria's decision to start inspecting trucks at its border with Hungary has created a huge 15-mile traffic jam on the main Budapest.